Session number 27247, Reel 6.
Mr. Frank Borlée, Reel 6. Now, we were talking about when you'd landed.
Can I break my nose?
You just landed at. now, this is by the River Orme.
We are now alongside the Caen Canal.
Oh, you're alongside the Caen Canal, not. The bridge was called. This is next to Pegasus.
The bridge was called the Caen Canal Bridge at that time.
Later on, Pegasus Bridge.
Pegasus, renamed Pegasus Bridge.
And, right, so tell. So you bounced about, but you're all right. You've come to a stop. Where have you come to a stop?
We've come to a thundering halt. We're out of the glider. No need for the Bangalore torpedo. We're already through the barbed wire.
Now, how did you get out? What do you remember of getting out, you yourself?
Well, the glider, right opposite me was the exit door, which was under control of Parr. He was to lift the door up. He was having a bit of a job with the door because it got jammed. I think it was Paddy O'Donnell who jumped up on the other side and gave him a hand, and they shot the door over, and the next thing we're out, because we're right opposite the door. We're out of the door. I was up onto the little bit of high ground, and next minute, well, I know Jack was by me, and he said, where's Paddy and that? We're all out. I said, yeah, come along, and we went and do a job, which was to knock out the pillbox.
Now, what do you remember of the attack on the pillbox?
Well, the pillbox was very, very simple. We, the rest of the section, kept back. Jack and Pa went on just ahead of us. That's Corporal Bailey, there's. He put the grenade actually into the slot of the pillbox. By this time, the first section was already halfway across the bridge.
So, they didn't use either the Bangalore.
We had no need to use
the pole charge.
We had no need to use either the well. We couldn't use the Bangalore torpedo because it snapped in half on the landing, and we didn't use the pole charge. We didn't have to get those out of the glider at all.
So you were watching as the two of them basically captured the pillbox.
They put the grenade in the pillbox. We immediately run round the back of the pillbox, which we knew contained troops. There was a large dugout built. I went down one end of the dugout, and O'Donnell went down the other. And lo and behold, we caught them in bed. I was in bed. There was about approximately 8 workers. These were, I understand, were digging the anti-glider holes and poles that they were putting in. And 3 Germans. We rounded them up and put them into the pillbox, which we now found to be empty, and stuck them in the pillbox. Then continued on to search the building, which we thought was a lockkeeper's house, but it wasn't. It was just where the lockkeeper operated the machinery for the bridge from. There was a pistol shot. Sounded like a pistol shot to me anyway. It was a pistol shot. Coming round the corner, I found an old Frenchman who had been shot through the chest. I put him into a wheelbarrow, an old wooden wheelbarrow. Pulled him up and laid him in a wheelbarrow. I'm afraid I had to leave him.
Now, who'd shot him?
Don't know. Never found out. I was hoping to find out from the lockkeeper's son. But I never got a story, and I still, from that day to this, I don't know who he was.
Now, how far from the pillbox and the dugout behind it was the lockkeeper's building?
Just across the road. So just out across the road.
Now, did you find anybody as you searched the building?
There was nothing to search. It was just an operating room. We thought it was a lock. We was almost told it was a lockkeeper's house, but it wasn't. It was an operating room where he operated the machinery for the bridge. The lockkeeper's house was down in the village. I found afterwards. We found that out. We completely reassured ourselves that there was nothing there, because the object of us doing this was we didn't want anybody firing at the backs of our troops as they crossed the bridge. This was the main reason that we this operation by scout check was carried out.
Now, what did you do? I may have missed this, but what have you done with the prisoners you'd taken in the dugout?
They was put into the pillbox.
Under guard?
No, we just stand went there and shut the door. We didn't.
You took the weapons off them, though.
They had no weapons with them.
Now, meanwhile, what was happening on the bridge? Because you said...
Well, what was happening on the bridge was, I can only tell you, is what people told me, because I wasn't there.
So you don't... That's fair enough. You don't know that. There's no... Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard many, many stories about what happened. I know that my platoon officer was killed on the bridge. Found it out quite a bit of time later. Also know that 24 platoon, David Woods' platoon, which was the third glider in, he'd run into a bit of trouble. He'd been shot in the legs. His wireless operator had been shot, killed, and his batman had been wounded as well. But I wasn't on those.
That was going on somewhere else. Now, had you come under fire at all, your section?
No, not at all.
So you found this wounded French civilian. You dealt with that. Now what happened next?
Our job with him was to go across the bridge, which we done. We went across the bridge as a scout.
Now were you under fire as you crossed the bridge?
No. There was no fire as we crossed the bridge. No fire whatsoever. When we got over the bridge, Howard directed us to go back and take up our position in the gun emplacement that we knew was facing the chateau, and scout section to go in.
You went back across the bridge?
Yes.
So you went back to the side you'd started
from? Yes. And into the dugout, which was facing the chateau, which we was told had a gun in it. That's what we was told originally.
Now what happened?
It was still dark. We was in the dugout, been in there for quite a time, probably an hour.
Now, what was this gun emplacement and dugout like? This isn't the pillbox.
Well, we didn't know at that time. It was still dark.
This isn't the pillbox. This is something
else.
No,
this is the gun. This is the gun emplacement facing the chateau.
The chateau is which chateau is that?
Well, that's Chateau Benneville.
So you're there. Now, was anything happening to you while you were in that gun emplacement?
Not in that particular time, no.
Was there a gun there?
There was a gun there. It turned out to be a PAC gun, PAX. Didn't do anything with it at that particular point of time because it was dark. The next thing we heard was the noise of a tank. Not knowing what was going on from where we were. But the next thing it was, we heard an explosion. And then there was which we now know the tank brewing up, the explosion, all the ammunition going off inside the tank.
Now what tank was this? Was it German?
Well, this tank, I now know, came down the road, two of them. Corporal Thornton laid in wait inside one of the walls of one of the houses, and he fired the pit at the tank, which knocked the tank out. The other tank turned tail and ran, and this brewed up the tank in the middle of the crossroads. That was done by Corporal Thornton, for which he was awarded the Military Medal. This was what was going on there. We didn't know where, in the position we was in facing the chateau, we was probably the furthest point out, which is correct, which where the scout section should be. We didn't know what was actually going on up on the road. All I know is that nobody ever went into the Pegasus Cafe during the length of time we was there at all. That door was guarded by a chap called Ted Noble, and nobody went in or out of that building during the period of time that we was on, which is now known as Pegasus Bridge. Well, when it started to get first light, and that's when things began to happen. Hell of a lot of sniping. You couldn't move about. Nobody could get me. We were pretty well pinned down by snipers. They was firing at us from the direction, from the chateau to where we were, but we couldn't place them at all. We couldn't find them. But they practically pinned down any movement that we was making on the bridge. Next we hear bagpipes coming down the towpath. Was this officer with his white submarine sweater on and a piper behind him. The section was over the other side, 24 platoon, was shouting at them to pack it up and keep back from the bridge area. For anyway, they continued on coming down. The piper packed up, and next, and if you're going across the bridge, run. We were shouting at them as well. Run, run, don't walk for Christ. Well, one or two of them, I'm afraid, didn't take a great deal of notice. The next thing, there was laying on, three of them actually, laying on the floor.
Now this is the right, is this Lord
this
Lovett?
Is Lord, this was Lord Lovett.
And the commandos?
And the commandos. He ran across the bridge. He didn't walk across the bridge. He ran. And Bill Millard, the piper, said afterwards, well, you don't play the bagpipes when you're running. So he never piped them across the bridges. The storyline is. They ran across the bridge. They got up as far as the crossroads, as I understand.
Crossroads. Now, which village is that they're entering?
Where the crossroads are now, they're now going back towards Le Pont. The crossroads at Le Pont. Prior to the commandos getting through, we were starting getting dribs and drabs of the 7th Battalion. They were supposed to come through us and reinforce Le Pont crossroads. They were promised there'd be at least 600 to 800 men. Up to our past three, there was only, as I'm given to understand, there was only 180, owing to the fact that it had been dropped all over the place. They was coming through in dribs and drabs, and the same thing we were saying to them when you come, got a little bit, those down it towards the other bridge, but then telling them about the problem with the sniping and the shooting as you approach the bridge. And they was running across the bridge. I'm afraid to say two or three of them didn't make it. And this was the scenario.
So they're all coming in from the side you're on, crossing the bridge and going on into...
Going up towards Le Pont Crossroads.
Is anyone staying on your side? Is anyone staying on your side? That's the side where the glider actually landed. Or just you?
That's all it was. The other sections were, and then those, the 7th Para Battalion, as I understand, made it to the church in Le Pont, and they was under fire, quite heavy fire, and a couple of our sections went up to help them out. Corporal Knox, one of our corporals, got killed up there with them. But that side of it, I wasn't actually in that action at all. All I can stress to you is I was in comparison to the others, we was very, very safe.
You were in this gun emplacement.
Yes, we was very safe in comparison to the others. And we was in that gun emplacement, and then somebody thought that the snipers were firing at us from the water tower, from the chateau, which was also, we didn't know at the time, was a maternity home. So we looked around and we found three armour-piercing shells. We loaded the pack gun, aimed it on, fired at the water tower, put a hole completely through the water tower. Fired another one at a very large tree that was in front of the chateau, which we thought the snipers might be up. Being armour piercing, that just whistled straight through the tree, didn't do anything at all. Fired a third shell. At the water tower again and missed. When John Howard shouted out to us, "Stop firing that bloody gun." And that was the end of the pack gun. We never used that again. We couldn't use it anymore anyway, because all the shells that were stacked there were calibrated to be used in kilometres and God knows what, which we didn't understand. I mean, say, we didn't understand metric whatsoever. So the gun never played any further part in the actual covering of the bridge, like to use it for covering fire or anything. We couldn't use it. It wasn't used. Well, we stopped in that position for the rest of the day. By then, there was units. A Canadian unit had reached us. Canadian unit with their bicycles. I'm afraid quite a few of them got killed trying to cross the bridge also.
And you were still being plagued by snipers, but you weren't suffering casualties.
We wasn't, no. All we was doing, we was putting shovels up, berries up on shovels and getting holes in them and things like that, but nothing to... The trouble was, after we pierced the water tower, a woman appeared on the balcony of the chateau waving a white flag, piece of material, and Howard forbid us to fire onto this building again. But we always maintained the snipers were in that building. I still do to this day. They was too accurate, knowing a little bit about sniping. They must have been very, very comfortable in their position, because comfort is the first password to good sniping. If you're not comfortable in the position, you don't get an accurate shot. These people must have been very, very comfortable in there, because, as I say, they were so accurate. And they took a lot of casualties. They made a lot of casualties for, not for us, but for other regiments and other personnel. We then was told, now getting dark, that the colonel, the rest of the regiment had landed in the afternoon further back from us. They came down and crossed over the, and I was told, come down towards the bridges, but they pulled short, very, very short of the bridge, a couple of kilometres actually, a couple of mile. And then the word come along that we was going to lead the regiment out. D Company were going to lead the regiment out to capture Eskerville. It was now dark. We were most amazed because we'd then been two nights without sleep. The regiment hadn't even been a nightmare. We couldn't make out why one of the other companies couldn't lead out, because we'd already been in action there and had no sleep for two nights.
Were you like, how tired were you?
Very tired. Very tired.
Was we'd it affecting your efficiency, do you think?
Well, that's just what we couldn't make out. I mean, say, if you're not so tired, if you've managed to get your sleep and your food, we'd had no proper food.
That's what I was going to ask next about.
We'd had no proper food whatsoever.
Had you not got emergency rations or?
We didn't even have we didn't have no compo ration. Never carried them on the glider. So it was fairly hungry as well. And no sleep. And they said, right. But the colonel was adamant that we should lead the regiment out. And we advanced towards Escoville.
Now what do you remember of that? The attack on Escoville?
Well, the attack on Escoville, we didn't have any actual attack on it. We approached it. I was out on front with Paddy O'Donnell and managed to get up to the road opposite the school, as I now know it. Then all hell broke loose along the road. Scything through 22 platoon was a couple of tanks, German Panzers. They scythed through 22 platoon, actually running some of them over. The Sergeant Barwick, he went out into the road to try and stop a tank and that run him down. I was with Paddy O'Donnell. We got up behind this agricultural machine, which I thought was a big garden roller. Managed to get off about three or four shots.
At the tanks?
At some Germans who was in the doorway. They'd got out of a lorry. Said to Paddy, go back and let Sweeney know what was happening, because he was having lost our platoon commander, who'd taken over our platoon. Go back and tell him that there's quite a body of men up here. Next thing I know, is a terrific explosion. Don't remember any more now until I'm being dragged down the road by two Germans. I've got a piece of shrapnel through my arm, like a giant knitted needle, pinning my arm up. And I was dragged off down the road. And that was my end of the actual action in Escoville from that point of view. I was dragged off down the road, bundled into this farmyard.
So you'd been captured as well?
Been captured.
Now, what had wounded you? Did you find
out? Shrapnel. Airburst, as I understand, from a tank. I don't know. One or two other people said it was a mortar bomb. I don't know.
How were you feeling?
I was pretty groggy at this time. Pretty groggy.
Where were you wounded? I was through
my arm. It pinned my arm up with like a long, giant, thin knitting needle. Thicker than a knitting needle, but it'd gone right through my arm, pinning it up in a locked position.
And that was the only wound? No other
special wound? I had a very, very large... My knee was very, very badly swollen. I don't know how that came about, whether I was thrown up into the air or something such as that, I don't know. This German soldier tried to cut through this piece of metal through my arm with a pair of wire cutters. It wouldn't touch it. So another sort of person came along, I don't know whether he was a doctor or what he was, or whether he's medical, but he actually got hold of a pair of pliers and pulled this out of my arm, releasing my arm. He then bandaged it up with like a crepe paper bandage. And he said to me in English, keep still. So I looked at him and he said, I learned English. I was a clerk on the Manchester Shipping Canal prior to the war. He said, and I learnt my English working for a German import-export company. Well, I was left against the wall. Nobody took a blind bit of notice of me whatsoever. They was rushing about and tearing about. And it started to get... That must have been... I lost track of time then on. Well, nobody come round to see me. Nobody done anything for me. I'd had a drink of water. I was hoping that somebody in the farmhouse might have come and had a look at me, because that's where I was. And I'd got on my feet and I ran. I don't know where I was running to. I don't know whether I was going the right way, the wrong way, or any other way. But I ran. And I ran and I got into a large trench, which was trickly with water, but there was a stone pipe going underneath where it led into a gate. I got down into that. And I was waiting and waiting. I didn't know whether to give myself up or what the hell I was going to do. Then right out the blue, I heard a motor car, which I thought was a motor car. This motor car turned out to be a Jeep. So I jumped out and flagged it down. I was bundled into the Jeep, into the back of the Jeep. There's one person driving the Jeep. He pulled up down the, went down the road, we pulled up. He said, I think we're safe here. So he said his name was Sergeant Nankerville. And he was of the 7th Parachute Battalion. And he'd been on a recce. I don't know why he had to go so far on a recce, because it seemed to me things were pretty close. Anyway, he took me to divisional headquarters. I then made a recording with Chester Wilmot of the BBC on what had actually happened to me.
Now, tell me a bit about that. How did he do it? What happened?
He just asked me to tell him how I come to be out there, because he thought and I told him the exact story of the Sergeant Nankerville. I told him how I got away and just made this recording. I was pretty dopey this time. By now I'd also had some food. Then the divisional headquarters got shelled. Took refuge under this very, very large French table, which we turned up on his end.
And this is 1st Div headquarters?
This was divisional headquarters. Of the 6th Airborne Division. So, as I say, took this word. In the meantime, this sergeant had said to me where he lived. I said, he asked me where I lived. I said, in Elberton, near Wem. Well, he said, I live in Perivale. He said, if you get a chance, will you see my parents? So I said, well, I don't know where I'm going to go. But anyway, he gave me an address. I've got now 28 Tiverton Road. And that was Perivale, Middlesex.